Miami, Florida.
So what's it like over there, Will? A little bit different from sunny England?
It is a little bit warmer than sunny England. It is a little bit less humid than sunny Singapore. But Miami in particular has got a great vibe about it. So it's life is good.
Welcome back to the Leadership Show. I'm Ro. We've got Greg with us today from Vancouver, and I am joined by Newcastle's own Will Gibson. Will did a lot of stuff with me there in Asia, building retail networks all over. And today Will talks to us about what's it like in the Caribbean. So Will is now VP of retail for cable and wireless. So tell me a little bit more. How long have you been there now, man?
Nearly 18 months.
Wow, time flies.
So settled into our, second home in the city here now. Learned the lessons as to where we needed to be and where we didn't need to be in terms of commuting and, getting around and being near the center of the action. So it's all good. The pleasure of having our first child in November, young Elijah. And so, he loves being wheeled around the streets and, feeling that that beautiful warm air. So it certainly makes a change from where I was in the UK recently, which was, 34, 35 degrees, almost snow, wind every day. So life is great for the family here for sure.
And your beautiful dog settled in?
Ah, yeah. She's a globetrotter. She's got more air miles than quite a few humans I know, so she's a trooper.
How old is she now?
She's six.
Hey, my goodness. Hey, I remember, that was no one had ever negotiated a package for the dog before with me. And I remember when that came across my desk, I was like, what? There was a lot of lessons there for me as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, they are members of the family, aren't they? Yep.
Hey, Will, has she got a passport?
She has a passport. She has a pet passport. Has a photograph inside. Has all of her inoculations and various drugs that she's had to take over the years to be allowed into Singapore and the US. So she has a passport too.
Oh, that's fantastic, man. So let's talk a little bit about your background. We were associated through our times in Singapore. Then you moved back to beautiful England. Okay. You had a little bit of time where you were consulting, et cetera, downtime, some time to yourself, and then you moved across to Miami. What was the transition? How did that come about?
Actually, it came about through a phone call, and the phone call came about because of my LinkedIn profile. I've always been a big supporter of that particular site and very active around showcasing my abilities, putting down on paper what I've achieved, where I've been, and that has paid dividends many times across my career, and this was no exception. So I got a phone call one day, and a company were looking for a director of retail, and took it from there and never looked back.
And now you're a vice president, which is great.
My role as head of retail is to continue to bring all that to life and really have retail seen as a channel that is a sales enabler and not just sometimes an expensive cost center. That's a lot of what I've been doing over the last year, 18 months.
So it sounds a lot like deja vu. It's just a different part of the world similar things.
There were a lot of synergies from, the retail successes that we had in BlackBerry, that vision of dramatizing what's possible is, again, something that stuck with me. And we've clearly got a space for that in our stores. We've gone 99% paper-free. So, all of our marketing is on screens around the store. All of our products and services are live. So, if we have, as carriers often do, a support app that customers can use to get service, that is live on a handset in store. You know, often we have third-party partnerships, as we do with Deezer, a great music streaming app. You know, that is live on a handset in store. It's also connected to a Bluetooth speaker, and there is music playing 24/7 in our stores. So there were a lot of synergies and a lot of lessons, certainly, that I learned from what we did over in Asia, and I've translated that into the Caribbean. And, you know, there's a lot of global truths out there that, you know, customers want to be entertained. Yeah. And they also need to be educated, particularly in telecoms. It's a very fast-moving business. So we stuck with that, and I managed to bring it over very successfully.
You're actually bringing what so many firms are trying to achieve. You're bringing that to life.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, retail for me is the physical manifestation of your brand, and it's where all of the channels should come together seamlessly to deliver the end result for the customer, whatever that customer might be looking for. And, you know, the customer may be looking for service. It's there. Actually, we've improved service because we've now given the customer self-service options to speed up their transaction in store. You know, if a customer wants to find out about our products on the web and then come and see them installed, they're there. So, you know, absolutely everything that we do manifests itself in retail. And to me, that is the definition of an omni-channel strategy.
You know, Will, I've got to say, you know, I mean, you know, I'm a life retailer, right? So a lot of the stuff we're talking about, you know, I've had the fortune to pioneer in Australia, then take it across to Singapore and the globe with BlackBerry. Yep. But, you know, I was highly disappointed. I walked into a Microsoft store, the first in the world of its kind, and I see so much of the Me Toos, you know. I don't think, I mean, it's fantastic when you take it into a new market that such as you're doing and bringing things to life, which should be totally exciting in the islands because they haven't seen anything like it. It's still been dummy phones, et cetera, right?
Not at all.
And so it's revolutionary. It's transforming. It actually enriches people's lives, okay? People get excited, and it really is true service. And you feel like you're giving something back to the community. It allows them to make educated decisions. It enriches their communication and their lives. So there's huge social surplus, as I like to refer to it. But when I come to the Western markets, I haven't really seen, and I'd love to get your commentary around this because you're pretty much living and breathing this 24/7 now.
Mm.
Mate, I haven't seen it progress much. So I go to the Apple stores, it's the same it was 7 years ago, okay?
Yeah.
Newer versions of products. I go to the Microsoft store, it's the greeter, it's flat top tables, it's different products aligned, simple, you know. And a whole bunch of people walking around and, you know, that soft sell, okay?
Yeah.
It's disappointing. It hasn't really gone anywhere further. Where do you see it going in the future, or do you think it'll just stay stagnant like that?
No, I think it does have another natural progression to go to, but I think there's a reason why a lot of the Western markets are very me too, and that's just purely the return on the investment and, you know, the analytics. And, you know, a lot of the you know, the big corporates are very extensive at how they analyze absolutely everything, you know, where a customer goes in store, what they touch, how they buy, and so on and so forth. And what I think a lot of companies have stopped doing is they've stopped looking at where is the next thing, what do the customers need from us, and they've been looking inward for too long and really squeezing every last scrap of profit out of the retail. And there comes a time where I think you have to say, what is the right thing to do for the customer, regardless of whether that makes us a huge amount of revenue or makes us a big return. And a classic example of that would be the charging station that, you know, I know we toyed with back in the day in Asia, but I've brought to life in a big way in our stores here. You know, I wanted to give something back to the communities. And the fact of life is that most people have a smartphone nowadays, And that smartphone has a battery that will die because of the screen and the amount of times that we're using it and so on and so forth. So everybody are constantly looking and conscious of what is my power percentage. The station we introduced is a free of charge service. It's something that customers can use whether they're a customer of us or not, because of course I want my competitor customers in my stores. And it's something that the communities, particularly in the Caribbean, they've embraced. And yet, you know, walk around Western malls and Western stores, and you still don't see what I would class that as being a basic service embedded in those places. And I think it's because they've lost sight of what's the right thing to do for the customer, and instead they're just too inwardly focused. You know, where am I going to squeeze the next cent from?
No, I think you're absolutely right there, particularly in markets such as the Caribbean, where power sources are, I imagine, challenged, right? Hey, mate, question for you. I remember you snuck that one in on me in Asia. I'm not going to let you forget that. Did you put it at the front of house or back of the house?
Yeah, we put it front of house.
I knew you'd put it at the front of house.
Yeah, it's front of house. It's something that customers now intuitively, they come into our stores, they choose their locker, they lock it away, they know that it's trusted, they know it's secure, and you know they can go and have a coffee, or they can finish their shopping experience with us, and you know they can get an extra 40-50% power and be happy about it. So and driving footfall is another key thing. You know, we all know that's the holy grail for retail. You know, you have to get feet through the door, and this certainly does that, and it gets my competitor customers in too, because I want to talk to them. I want a chance to talk to them.
Will, one of the things that I'm also really interested in hearing from you on is how influential are the big brands, the big in this case mobile providers, smartphone providers, how influential are they on your direction? How do you manage them accordingly, so that you obviously drive sales and they invest, but at the same time you meet your objectives and the themes and the approaches that you'd like to take? How do you manage that?
Yeah, I've always had this theory that a brand needs to tell its own story from its own perspective. And one of the things that has disappointed me about telecoms retail over the last kind of 5 to 10 years is sometimes the power of the manufacturers can have a different agenda. And then there's also, how do you, from an aesthetics point of view, marry all of these brands? One of the things that I was very conscious of with our story, particularly because we had Cable and Wireless and Columbus as parent companies coming together, and we had two brands coming together, Lime, which was the Cable and Wireless established for 7 years in the Caribbean, and Flow, which was predominantly the TV brand, but a much younger brand. We had them coming together, and actually our end result was to choose Flow. So there was a period of our brands coming together and then becoming one. So some markets, for instance, the Cayman Islands, very high ARPU market for us, they'd never heard of Flow before. So the customers had no connection. So in our retail experience, I wanted to tell the Flow story from our perspective. So I made a conscious decision not to allow third-party brands in from the beginning. And I went a stage further. The handsets and the tablets that we deploy around our store, they all have an attract loop that is Flow branded. So nothing goes dark. You know, there's no, black handset face in our stores. They are all 24/7 powered on with a beautiful branded attract loop that tells the story of that device from our perspective. So here is X device, and it might be, a Samsung. But here are the plans that you can get with that device. Here are the features and the specifications that are relevant to us. So we're telling our story. And certainly the feedback that we've got from our customers is that they really now understand the brand a lot more. When they visit our retail environments, the brand resonates. And I firmly believe that is the way a carrier should approach it. Having said that, there is the cold hard facts of commercials, and a lot of the handset manufacturers, you know, do have very deep pockets. Collaboration is always needed because there's a win-win there. You know, we need them, they need us. So, you know, I will release the brake on that over the next few months, but I'll do it in a way that fits in with my brand, and I'll do it tactfully. And I think that will give us that win-win that we're looking for.
That's fantastic. Hey, well, let's change gears a little bit. I'd like to understand, I mean, we do a lot of work on happiness, culture, people, mindset, that type of thing, right? And we're starting to advise a lot of boards in that particular space as well. And we've got a very, we've got a leadership show coming out with the Hindu equivalent to, you know, a spiritual leader, say the Pope. So His Holiness, we spend a lot of time in terms of happiness and, you know, purpose of life and meaningful, doing meaningful work, etc. Right? Surely seems like you're doing meaningful work, work that's, you know, designed to be in your nature now. When I think back, and I love your perspective on this because, you know, you're a guy who is in tune with his feelings and, you know, where he's at in life, etc. And you're certainly self-made, which is wonderful. If you look back 2 years ago, right, when you were deciding in terms of what is it that you want to do, etc., right, how do you see the differences in your mindset in terms of where you were at then to compare to where you're at now? And what are some of the consistencies that you hold from a day-to-day perspective that keeps you on top of your game?
I think it's, you know, deciding your path in life can be difficult sometimes, and sometimes things happen that will decide things for you. And, you know, the BlackBerry story was a great one. You know, I was very happy in Singapore, and, you know, we had a particular life plan, and then that changed and came to an end, and you know, we had to move back to the UK. That was taken out of our hands. And I remember at first, whenever you have a big life change, there can be a kind of a tendency to kind of retreat into oneself and kind of see the negatives. And I just firmly believed I needed to stay active and see the positives, and that my next big adventure was only round the corner. But if I sat there doing nothing, it might not find me. And so I did two things when I was in the UK for, it was about six months between Singapore and Miami. You know, first I reached out to my network and activated that network and helped a few friends and colleagues and did a bit of consulting and, you know, worked on a great pitch with a business in the Ukraine that I knew, which was a fantastic experience. So that really kept me going. Allied to that, I already talked about the kind of the LinkedIn piece. So, you know, I really activated that. I started blogging. I started talking about my experiences. And I kind of treat that as work, even though, you know, it wasn't a remuneration. It was, you know, okay, I'm going to work today. I'm going to write my blog. And that kept me really, really positive. And then the next piece was thinking about something that I could do for me that, you know, again, kept me moving forward. And, you know, I played golf four times a week. You know, I'd always been a golfer, and I'd play 8 to 10 times a year, and, you know, wasn't particularly good, you know, 18, 20 handicap. And, you know, I played four times a week. And in 6 months, I took 10 shots off my average. So it's about having that mindset to realize that while something may happen that might not fit you right now, if you keep on moving forward in life and doing positive things that are going to stretch you and help you grow as a person, you know, that opportunity will come along. And sure enough, it did. And, you know, I haven't looked back since. I absolutely love Miami. I love the States. I love the fact that my job now means I can give back to communities, particularly across the Caribbean. It's really rewarding. And I think if I hadn't have consciously taken those two measures to keep moving forward in my life, the opportunity may not have found me.
Hey, Will, I'd like to touch on a couple more points over here. One was, I remember going as far back as when you worked with me or for me, you always had the US in mind, okay?
Yeah.
I remember us having career planning sessions and you were always planting that seed in my head to, to get you across there. And I was saying, just get this job done, right? But mate, that's one point. So it's manifested what you'd actually visualize. And I remember you were actually very, very serious about it. You and Vicky talking about this quite a bit.
Yep.
Number one. The other really positive, and I think that's one of the biggest wins you guys have had, both as a couple and as a family, is, the new member of the Gibson family. If you don't mind sharing a little bit about that and the positivity around that, that'll be wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, Vicky and I, my wife, have been together 18 years, childhood sweethearts. She was 17, I was just north of 21, and we met and stayed together ever since. And we love traveling, we loved adventures, and we hadn't necessarily considered children as part of what we wanted to do. And when we moved out to Miami, it certainly wasn't on the radar. It was kind of, oh, wow, look at this adventure. What is this gonna do for us? And literally within 3 or 4 months, we got the news that said, okay, Junior's coming along. And believe you me, it was a shock. And so, we took some time to reflect and just said, well, you know what? This has been sent to us, and it must have been sent to us for a reason. So, let's embrace it. It's another adventure. It's not something that we considered, but let's think about the positives and what that can bring to us. And, certainly Elijah has enriched our lives in ways that both of us could never have imagined. And I think, again, it's just having that mindset sometimes that, if something happens to you, don't let it knock you off course, or don't let it define what you're going to do next. Think about it and make a measured, and in the case of myself and my wife, a measured joint decision about what it is you're going to do and how you're going to approach it. And, we absolutely love being parents, and Elijah's such a happy little dude. He greets us with such a huge smile every morning. And, he has changed our lives. And and again, I would put our success there, I think, it's early days, but, he's thriving and he's healthy. I would put our success there down again to mindset and to the fact that, you can make things happen in your life. Whatever you want to do, you can do it. You just have to work out how.
Yeah. Look, Will, you've always been full of energy and focused and very clear in terms of what it is that you wanted, and I think all of that's paying off, and deservedly, and it's so wonderful to see Elijah in your lives, and both of you guys actually ending up where for now we ended up where you wanted to. So what's the cricket been like for you, mate? What are your thoughts around that?
Well, you're asking about cricket, man.
This guy's an opening bat, man. He'll stay there for. He'll stay there for 50.
Sorry, what was that?
I said he'll stay. This is the batsman that stays there for 50 overs, man, and he's on 49 runs. So tell me.
That's me. I'm the boring one.
You're gonna have to explain to listeners in the States, my friend, because no one will have any idea what the heck that was.
You're kidding.
Yeah, I'm kind of So I've started to get into baseball now. So I'm the kind of I'm the leadoff guy. I'm never going to hit a home run, but you know what? I'll get onto first base for you.
There you go.
So that's me. But no, the cricket's been the slight down point. It's not easy to see it and view it out here. And I've been following England from afar, but I miss the buddies back home and that sound of willow on leather I haven't heard it for a while, and you know, I missed the whole season last year. I didn't make it back to the UK, and you know, I do miss that a little bit. But the positives outweigh, and you know, I'm sure I will be back on the cricket field at some point soon, boring everybody to death.
The opportunities you have to go down to the Caribbean, and so Ro, I'll give you that, man.
Yeah,
you know, the West Indies,
that's a great place.
For sure. Yeah,
cheers. It's a great sport, and hopefully England can get a bit of respect back.
Yeah.
Hey, remember that game we watched in Ranchi? How that old woman ate our heads off?
Yeah, in the only dry state that, you know, we could think about going to watch cricket in.
Oh, nice.
Remember that? We couldn't get a drink anywhere.
Couldn't get a drink. Will was pretending to be part of the royal family.
I was giving TV interviews out the car and... pretending to be Jeffrey Boycott or whoever, you know, who's going to win. And it was hilarious. It was a great experience.
How about the negotiations to get the pen in?
The Mont Blanc pen, the $200 pen. He was not going to let you have that into the stadium at all.
That was fantastic, man. So... Will, some of your favourite places? Yeah, I know you've got a map on the wall there somewhere, I bet, even in this house.
Yes.
Where you've travelled, and you share that with your mother-in-law, if I'm correct.
Yes.
what are some of the new markings on there, and some that you still... Yeah, let's go with the new ones, and then we'll go with your favourite ones. How's that?
Yeah, so the new ones have been mainly around the US and the Caribbean. I had a great trip to Nashville recently, which was a big ambition of Vicky, actually, because she's a big country music fan. So, you know, we went up there, and it's music, beer and dancing and what's not to love. So that was really, really fun. And, you know, some of the other dots have been around the Caribbean. That, you know, there's some beautiful places. And I tend to like the islands that have got some kind of dramatization to them in terms of scenery. So a few of the more mountainous ones. So St. Kitts, even though it's very, very small, is absolutely beautiful. And also St. Lucia. You know, you drive up there into the mountains and you drive down the west coast towards the Pitons, which are the two volcanic mountains there, and it's just amazing. So I'm still continuing the travel, and we've got some more trips planned this year for sure.
Man, that's fantastic. Some of your favorite spots around the world. I know you've been to a lot of countries, Will.
Yeah. I mean, I love Kiev as a city in Ukraine. It was heartbreaking to see all the unrest and turmoil that's still going on there. But it's such a beautiful place. You know, the food is great. The people are very humble. So that was very, very dramatic. Some of the other places, I would say I was lucky enough to, you know, obviously based in Singapore, did a fair bit of travel, but Japan and Tokyo blew me away. Just the energy in the country as a whole, but also in Tokyo as a city, is infectious. And it's a crazy place that, you know, you look at things sometimes and you just go, wow, that's brilliant. And people there have a very different view of themselves, and they're a lot less reserved, and you can get a guy who's standing in an arcade jumping around bashing the red buttons that, you know, in the West sometimes, and particularly in the UK, people will be standing around worried who's watching them. And, you know, that's what I loved about Tokyo. It's that old adage of, you know, dance like no one's watching. And and that's what I got from Tokyo. I loved it.
All right, now I can see why Vivian hangs out there 3 months a year.
Yeah.
That's the younger one. Hey, Will, I noticed some of the language is really, you know, must have been drummed into you quite hard, such as dramatization. It's good to see. Good to hear you, man. Good to hear you plug that.
Where I got that one from.
Oh, that's fantastic. Great.
So, hey, well, it's you know, and I agree, all these wonderful experiences, whether it's corporate, whether it's personal, whether it's interspersed, you know, it all leads up to a strong foundation for how you go about running your business, as well as, I think, managing your life. And as you know, Ro and I and the team at Populous, we've built out, you know, a comprehensive leadership framework. And one of those, you know, some of the aspects I wanted to really talk to you about as well, because I think that we see a lot of evidence of what, you know, what we've ingrained in organizations. We see a lot of evidence in terms of what you're doing. So maybe you could just talk to us a little bit about how you go about setting strategy without divulging too much to your your competitors. It'd be great. Maybe we start off with that. Just talk to us a little about strategy, what you look for, why, where, when, all that good stuff.
Yeah, my strategy always begins, and I can sum it up in one word, is immersion.
Okay.
You know, be it a retail strategy, or recently I've been working on a marketing strategy for the business. You know, I immerse myself in that business, in those markets where we do business, and I see how people interact with us. I see how they like to do business with us. I see how their life is, where they eat dinner, where you know, they spend time at the weekend. And as well as that immersion, it's looking particularly at retail, at, you know, what is it that we do that we're good at? What is it particularly that the competitor does that they're good at or not so good at? And from there, it's about finding, okay, what's the path? And I think once you've spent some real time in a place or in a business or in a market and really looking at an area of the strategy, if you've done your due diligence and immersed yourself well, you will know the starting point of that strategy. So that's my first part.
Excellent. Makes a lot of sense. I think that there are many organizations and leaders out there that do not take those kinds of steps that you've taken. And to, you know, roll up your sleeves, get into that environment and embrace it.
Yeah, for sure.
That's great. So Will, maybe we'll talk a little about a process as well. This term you'll be quite familiar with, because I think we've all kind of chuckled about it in the past. But this notion that retail is detailed, so talk to us about process, because obviously, you know, rolling out a retail environment is no small feat, and a lot of folks have to be involved, and you know, there's a lot of steps and a lot of check marks you have to put into play to make sure you're following, you know, your plan. So how do you go about process and ingraining in the organization a methodology to success?
Yeah, I often liken retail processes to that of a restaurant. And it's about making sure that every step of that customer's journey, be it through a restaurant or be it through your store, is controlled and you understand it. And you have processes that can make that journey work. So if you think about it, you know, a particular restaurant, and, you know, let's say, you know, someone wants to be quite high end, you know, they may have a process where a customer is greeted as they come in, and they're talked about their table, and then they're walked to their table. And, you know, I'm going through very quickly, but there's steps 1, 2, and 3. You know, maybe they train the waiters to pull the chairs out for the ladies, as they should, and that's step 4. Next thing is they might train to ask if they've dined at the establishment before, at step 5, and you can go on and on. Do they bring water automatically, or do they ask if you prefer sparkling or still? And it's only when you get into that level of granularity about what you want your customer's journey to be, can your retail store start to work. And in particular, in telecoms, you've got multiple customer journeys. So you've got the customer who's in a hurry, who just wants to come in and pay their bill. You've got the customer who's in a hurry, whose phone is not working, and they want to come in and seek some help from you. They've got a customer who's just popped in because they're killing some time, but do you know what? Now they've decided to upgrade their phone and they want to buy something from you. So you've got multiple customer journeys. And what I always do to make sure that a retail chain is working is I map those customer journeys out and I step them through myself and I look for processes that may be missing. Or I look for staff who may not have been trained to treat a customer in a particular way. Ergo, even though that process might be there, it's missing because nobody's using it. So that's how I look at a chain, and I make sure that in detail, as you say, every single step of my desired customer journey for that customer is there. And I treat that the same way as if it were as if it were a restaurant, because I think the restaurant business has to think about those customer journeys very well and the whole experience. And I think in retail, just because we're selling something, we should treat customers in the same very kind of reverential way by understanding their journey through our store. So that's how I do it.
Fantastic. And again, demonstrating just how important ticking all the boxes and following a certain process is to your success. And I think it sort of reminds me a lot of the Ritz-Carlton way in much of what you've been describing as well.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, so we also know, Will, that people are core to the success of any organization, and we certainly connect with those organizations that place people first. Talk to us a little bit about your emphasis on how important people are to the organization and to whether it's the rollout of the process or, of course, the delivery on the strategy. Talk to us a little bit about your philosophy on the importance of people.
I think this is the single biggest reason where a lot of businesses or business units get it wrong. You have to have people on your side. It's the old adage that everybody is fighting for the general, or everybody's rowing the boat in the same way. But I think people forget about how that manifests itself. And I think as a leader, you have to understand everybody's unique situation and understand their strengths and what they can bring to you, rather than consistently focusing on their weaknesses. And I think particularly in today's millennial age, you will find yourself working with a lot of people who have grown up very differently to how you or I grew up. And it's about being a leader to them, but allowing them that flexibility that is all apparent in today's world. And I'll give you a great example. One of my team members right now has worked for me a little bit over a year, a lady called Christiana, and she runs all of my training. And she initially joined me as a contractor based out of St. Lucia. And I actually didn't meet her in person for 6 months. But I was able to, through regular conversations, regular Skypes, I was able to understand what she was about as a person. And, I knew what she would deliver, and I would judge her on her outputs rather than worrying, hey, I'm in Miami, she's in St. Lucia, what is she doing right now? What if she's not at her desk? And I remember we had an open and frank conversation about she's a bit of a night owl, and I would often laugh and see quite a few emails come through at 8, 9 p.m. at night. And I would say, Christiana, why are you working so long? And she said, well, actually, she said, I'm kind of not. She said, I might disappear a little bit in the afternoon for a couple of hours, but she says, my energy peaks in the evening time, and that's when I like to work. And she said, my husband goes out often in the evening because, of his job. And I said, That's great. That's fine. Keep on producing what you're doing for me. Keep on working in that way. And I think businesses now, they forget that the world has changed. And I think leaders also don't get on that level with their people. A lot of leaders just look for that negative, look for what's missing. And I prefer to look for what can that person bring and why, and empower them that way. And it's worked.
That's great, Will. And I imagine that your engagement levels within the organization are also very, very high. with that demonstration of support, as well as the rapport that you're able to establish with the folks on your team. So that's a great story, which to me dovetails very nicely into another aspect that I wanted to talk to you about, which is the business culture. How would you describe the business culture at Cable and Wireless, and particularly within your organization as well?
It's really changing. Cable and Wireless is a nigh on 150 year old corporate giant that's had very various different guises. Now the business is primarily focused on our markets in the Caribbean and Central America, and as a telco, we're 8 million. Customers, we're 8 million subs. That's small. I remember working with MTS in Russia, and in one country they had 95 million subs.
Right.
So we're small, and I think the merger with Columbus and bringing in a billion-dollar business that was less than 10 years old has really changed the culture of Cable and Wireless for the better, in that it's now very entrepreneurial. So one of the things that we can do is we're fast, we're nimble, we can bring things to market quickly, we can trial new products and services, we can think of new ways to delight our customers, and we can get that done with speed, because we're not a corporate juggernaut like a Vodafone or a Telefonica that requires 7 or 8 review boards before you get anything out to market. So the culture now, particularly fostered from our Miami headquarters, where we have a great camaraderie. There's people socialize with each other all of the time. And I think that helps, and that the office has really come together and is really focused on supporting the markets in an enabling entrepreneurial way. So it's a good place to be.
So change is good.
Yeah, for sure. Embrace it.
You got it. Excellent. Well, which brings us to one of the last aspects, but certainly a very important aspect, which is leadership. And I'd love to get your, perhaps the top 5-6 characteristics that you ascribe to leadership, and why are they meaningful to you in terms of those aspects?
I think for me that the number one is always got to be integrity. I think people need to understand that their leader is acting in a way that is transparent and fair, not only to themselves but also the team and also the business. And I often use a lot of my travel skills and a lot of the other skills that I've picked up along the way to kind of say to people that a leader has to be very, very visible. They have to surround themselves with great people, but the leadership style of old, of being that person who decides where to go, what to do all of the time, is not necessarily going to cut it in today's world. You have to be a lot more collaborative, and that's where the integrity piece comes through, that if you can show that you are trying to make a difference in the business, you're trying to make a difference in your markets, and you're trying to encourage the people around you to contribute to that for no other reason in that you want to be successful and you want them to be successful as well, people are going to buy into that. I think too often sometimes leaders have an agenda and they sometimes keep knowledge and information or new ideas close to their chest and they only reveal it at a certain time. And I think sometimes that can lead to a lot of mistrust in organizations. And so that's why I place a lot of emphasis on, open, honest communications with integrity.
Excellent. Thanks, Will. Really appreciate that. And again, it sounds as if this is both an organization as well as an environment that is extremely uplifting for folks as well as highly engaging. So I commend you for all that. It's great stuff.
Thanks.
Hey, Will, thanks so much for sharing all your insights, man. Particularly great to see you and the family doing really well, and you're getting to utilize your skills, your know-how, and having fun doing that. Now, you're naturally a highly positive individual, so I know that, even when there are dramas and challenges, you will take them in your stride and
make the most out of those as well. And hey, where better to do it than in the Caribbean, right? And having a lot of fun. How are the rum sessions there? Any good?
Yeah, when you go down to market for sure, we've had a couple of nights in Barbados. We had a brand launch in St. Kitts where there was a bit of rum flowing, and after a long day, the sun's been shining all day, and then it's just setting. That for me is that golden period where the rum tastes especially nice, and it's such a rewarding place to be and to work and to travel to, and I'm very lucky. But I don't take that for granted. I keep working hard because, I need to repay the faith of that luck that's got me here. So, life is good.
Yeah. Well, one of your greatest attributes, as I've always said, is your ability to put in the effort, the hard work. So a boy from Newcastle, opening bat from Newcastle, now residing in Miami, having fun in the Caribbeans, leading the way in retail and customer engagement. Always fantastic to stay in touch and have a lot of fun with Will Gibson. Hey, Greg, thanks for joining us again from Vancouver. And to all our listeners, Will's an awesome story.
Thanks very much. Thanks for all. Thanks, Greg. Run, Johnny, run! Run, Johnny, run! Run, Johnny!